Hey there, and welcome to Money for Change, the podcast where we dive into the sustainability transitions that are reshaping our world. If you're curious about where the planet and its inhabitants are headed, you're in the right place. In each episode, we'll chat with experts from Triodos Bank, whose work relates to these changes, tackling topics like the energy transition, circular economy, and what sustainable finance really means. Our goal? To bring you the latest insights on what it takes to create a more balanced and just world. But we don't just want you to listen, we want you to be a part of the conversation. Head over to our website via the link in the show notes to share your thoughts, ask a question, or leave us a voice message. Welcome to Money for Change. Let's get started. Hi, my name is Ernst Hopma. I'm an economic researcher at Triodos, and I'm one of the hosts of Money for Change. Today, we're going to be diving into climate finance, and I will, as every week, do that with our chief economist, Hans Tegeman. Hans, welcome.
Thank you.
Climate finance is being discussed currently at the COP, which is going on in Azerbaijan. Hans, why are you not there?
Yeah, you would expect a bank so busy with climate finance to be there, right? Yeah, we decided that we don't attend this year because we didn't feel that we had so much to bring. And then we also had to travel to Baku. And if you don't know what to do there, then it's maybe good not to go.
Clear enough. Luckily, today in discussing climate finance, which is the main topic of this COP. So the COP happens every year to bring together everyone who signed the UNFCCC, the Framework Convention on Climate Change, that was signed in 1992. And every year since then, there's this COP, which means Conference of Parties. As I said, this year it's in Baku, Azerbaijan. And we are speaking to someone who is live at the COP. That someone is Hilde Stroot. She works at Oxfam Novib, an NGO that's been fighting for global equality already for many decades. Hilde is working there as a policy lead on climate justice. And before she went there, she also worked for Greenpeace in many roles. Hilde, welcome. Nice to have you. How is it over there?
Thanks for having me here in the podcast. We just kicked off week two and all the ministers have come in now. And well, week one was quite dramatic in many of the negotiation topics, talking about the new climate finance goal or talking about, you know, the energy package that's landed in the last COP that was quite a success. We saw almost no progress at all. Many parties blocking, further negotiations. Some of these topics even didn't make it to the second week. Which is really, really dramatic. And that means that they will only be discussed next year at the technical dialogues in Bonn. So it was quite dramatic. Now with the ministers coming in, you see that the vibe changes a little bit here. We see also that the G20 has started and we hear some positive noise from the G20, which impacts, of course, these negotiations here. So let's see. Let's see where we end in week two, and I'll remain hopeful. That's the only thing I can do, of course, because we really want to have an ambitious outcome also at this COP.
Yeah, well, good to hear that you are at least remaining hopeful and that it looks a bit better than at the end of the first week. Hilde, maybe you say the ministers are coming in now. Does that mean that you are sitting in negotiations with them, or what exactly is your role in this big event taking place?
So the civil society organizations are here as observers. That means that they can follow the negotiations between all the parties, which are all the countries. So we're not, a negotiating party. While we can make sometimes interventions in these negotiations, but of course, before and after those negotiations, we can meet with everyone we want. And that's, of course, what we do. So we meet with delegations, we meet with the ministers, we meet with the EU, the European Commission, also with Global South delegates. And we bring our points, we bring our recommendations. We'll make sure that they get our messaging. We also do actions here at the COP. We had one last Saturday with almost all of the civil society organizations involved. So we really put up the pressure and make sure that they won't leave this space without an ambitious outcome.
Great. Yeah, so you're there to make sure your voice gets heard and to push for an ambitious target. That's really good to hear.
Yeah.
Let's dive into the content a little bit, because This is a framework on climate change, but this year it's all about climate finance, right? And in this podcast, we are going to dive into what exactly is climate finance and what is the role of money in climate change. And maybe to start at the beginning, what is climate finance, Hilde?
Yeah, I'll go back a little bit into the COP and the negotiations. And if you look at the climate change nowadays, there are parties or countries that have caused the climate crisis we're in today, and parties that had very little to do with it. If you look back to all the emissions that, you know, are now in the atmosphere, there is, of course, a group of high-income industrialized countries, and I will call them Global Norths in this podcast, that actually have caused the climate crisis due to the disproportionate historic emissions. And that has been acknowledged in these negotiations. They call it the common but differentiated responsibility. So we're all in this boat, and we all have some responsibility, but some have far more than others. So that is an important pillar that underpins the negotiations here. And from that, it is clear that, you know, those countries that have not caused the climate crisis, have not contributed to it, but are at this moment, you know, being hit really hard by climate change, floods, droughts, cyclones, that they should actually be compensated for that. So that has already happened in the past. So there is, as we speak now, a climate finance goal where the Global North countries, so the high income, high emitting countries, pay 100 milliards to a Global South, on a yearly basis to compensate them. But that goal will phase out by 2025. And so we're here today to discuss a new goal, a new climate finance goal that will start from 2025 onwards. So that's why this COP is so important, because we have to, you know, conclude here with an ambitious goal that helps Global South countries.
When you say Global North countries, that includes countries like the Netherlands, where we're recording today, and the UK as well, I assume.
Yes, absolutely.
And they need to give money, and probably more than the 100 billion that runs out next year, to compensate other countries for the damage of climate change. Hans, can I ask you, is that all there is to climate finance, or are there more financial flows?
There's a lot to climate finance. And I think what Hilde said, the 100 billion is, if I'm not wrong, mostly loss and damage, right? If you look for it from a finance perspective, I would say, so we have financing mitigation, financing adaptation. So mitigation is trying to invest in renewables and other solutions for other sustainable energy sources. Adaptation is getting economies right for what things that come. And we have loss and damage, so things that already occurred as a consequence of climate change, they all need finance. And you can do that in different ways. You can say governments have to pay. So that's, I think, most on the table of the ministers. You can do it directly. You can also have combinations of public finance and private finance. We call it blended finance. But also publicly, you can do loans or gifts. And of course, not to forget, we work at a bank. Private finance, how can we catalyze more private finance to fill those gaps? I think that's... So if you look at the bigger scheme of what's climate finance, I think it's all that. And part of it is, I think, negotiated by the ministers this week, but not all. But correct me if I'm wrong, Hilde, because I'm not in Baku. I'm just here in the Netherlands.
I think that's correct, Hans. I think the only thing is that the current climate finance goal is for mitigation and adaptation. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, there is a loss and damage fund that has been adopted 2 years ago. Yeah.
So mitigation and adaptation, this 100 billion, that is both for, say, putting a solar panel and for making sure that a river doesn't flood, right? That is, the mitigation would be a solar panel, the adaptation is... And giving your river space to flood, if necessary. Maybe before I go on, I would like to talk a little bit about how much money do you actually think is needed? So one word that I hear a lot when I look at news, for example, is a financing gap. And that's a word where I think they quantify how much money would be needed. Hilde, do you hear that word going around at the COP? And what kind of numbers are being mentioned over there?
Yes, I think financing gap is the talk of the day. Because I spoke already about the current goal of 100 billion. But if you look at, you know, the needs for developing countries in terms of adaptation, so adapting to the climate change in their countries, all the damages that occur now in many of these countries, and on top the fact that these countries have to transition towards new economies without fossil fuels, we're talking about trillions of dollars. It's a magnitude from billions to trillions we're talking about. And that is what is on the table. And that is also what we call for. We call for $1 to $1.5 trillion. And these needs come clearly from reports, like recently a report which was published from the Adaptation Funds about the gap on adaptation. So what we need in terms of adaptation is something close to more than 300 billion in public finance per year by 2030, while currently in terms of what is on the table, what is being, I think in 2021, the amount was 28 billion. So we're talking about really, you know, a magnitude more, and that is on the table. That makes also these negotiations very difficult. I think there's recognition that this money should actually be provided, but that's something else than putting it on the table, of course. So what we see at this moment is a reluctance from global North countries to show, you know, their cards and to show what they're committed to put to the table.
So indeed, you hear financing gap, a lot more money seems to be needed, but the countries that should predominantly pay, the global North countries, do not seem willing to really commit.
Yeah.
Hans, could you tell us a bit more about the calculation of those financing gaps?
Yeah, I hate the word gap, to be honest, because there's no gap. There's enough money floating around. In financial terms, it's the required return you want to have. But it's also a mix-up of financeable solutions, but also subsidies going to fossil fuels, for example. So we have also 7 trillion a year going to fossil fuel subsidies, depending on how you calculate it. But also to give a perspective, so if you say 1.3 or 1.5 trillion a year is massive, yeah, but it's 1.5% of global GDP on an annual basis. So it's all a matter of perspective.
Yeah.
And I think, and that's also what Hilde said, what's underneath it is partly are rich, the northern countries, are they willing to pay? So is there willingness to pay? That has nothing to do with how much the gap is, but are you willing to pay for adaptation and mitigation? And on the other hand, are we willing to shift the capital, so to reallocate capital from giving subsidies to what's clearly harmful for climate to subsidies to either the global south, to mitigation, adaptation. It's all a matter of perspective. And of course, this is all politics. And it has to come from public finance, because simply saying we should mobilize more private finance is about risk return.
Yeah.
And if there is no return, then it will not happen.
Clear. So I think a lot to unpack in this answer. Hans is saying when we speak about gaps, that's a bit misleading, because we shouldn't only be sending more money some way, but we should be talking about what type of money we send that way. And we should also be talking about decreasing money flows, especially to fossil fuel subsidies. I'm going to just jump ahead, because I think I heard Hans say that he thinks global North countries should pay more money from public funds. Hilde, do you agree with that? Do you think that public finance flows from global north to global south should be bigger than they are today?
I couldn't agree more. And that is because what you see nowadays is that many of the global south countries are in deep debt distress, because many of the development aid money comes in loans. They spend more time, more of their government budgets in repaying those loans than actually to, you know, build their economies or their basic, you know, like schools and hospitals, let alone that they can make that transition. So what they need, and also in terms of mitigation, adaptation, and loss and damage, there is no business case for loss and damage. It's damage and it needs to be repaired. And the same accounts for adaptation. There is no business case for that. In terms of mitigation, yes, you could at some point expect there is a business case because you see that also clearly already in Global North here in the Netherlands, for instance, where you could actually, you know, build wind parks in the North Sea, which are profitable. But that is at this point not the case in Global South yet. But also the whole transition, you can't only do that with private money, you know. I was in meetings with some of my African colleagues, and some of their countries depend largely now on fossil fuel for their government revenues. Some even 80, 90%. So 90% of their government budget is coming from the fossil fuel industry at this moment. So how can you expect those countries to just simply, you know, transition away without any support? That's clearly impossible.
Yeah, I think that's a very clear and strong statement you're making, right? So there's not a business case for all the money that you'll need for climate finance.
Yeah.
And rather than trying to make it a business case and get private money in, we actually really need public money. And we actually need public money that is a gift rather than a loan, because with the loans, the Global South simply can't pay all of them back. I think you both agree on that. What I would like to see is if you both maybe have some idea on what, in addition to money, we could do about this climate crisis. And Hans, maybe do you have some ideas?
I think one of the ideas is the challenge at this moment, also for the Global North, is that the public debts are relatively high if you look to the US, but also to most of European countries. So it's also mobilizing extra money for a climate mitigation and adaptation. And I think one of the plans already announced in Brazil at the G7 was a wealth tax. So raising money by the richest people, and I think Oxfam Nova also an excellent report about it a few months ago. So they are polluting, so they are also responsible for a lot of the carbon emissions, the excess carbon emissions. And that could raise 250 billion. Which is a start, so you need some extras. But so that kind of idea is not saying, yes, it are people in the Global North that are emitting too much, they should pay.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take that as an example, I'm not saying it's only public out of the budgets of governments, then you might make the discussion a little bit easier as one example.
Yeah, okay. So indeed, try and really target it towards rich people in the Global North and not so much in general their government.
Financial transaction tax is also a nice idea.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to hear from a bank, of course. Hilde, do you have other ideas to add to what Hans is saying here?
Yeah, again, I couldn't agree more, because that, you know, you hear many Global North countries saying here, well, forget about it. We don't have that kind of public budget. But that's just not true. The money is there. It's just not flowing in the right direction. And there are so many ways. And we have, you know, given all those reports and recommendations to, like, the EU. We send them the reports showing, you know, there are all kinds of ways to actually collect that money, being it from, you know, the big polluters, the windfall profits from the oil and gas. They are just, you know, they are so huge. The wealth tax, as Hans mentioned, from the wealthiest here on Earth is also one. So there are many, many ways that you could actually ensure that money flows from dirty to clean and those that need it. And that's definitely what needs to happen. And then there is no argument anymore to say that the money isn't there. It's there. It's just not, you know, going in the right direction.
Yeah.
And that needs to change.
Yeah. So really look at the inequalities and the people who caused the climate crisis and see where you can
Absolutely.
You can mobilize that money indeed. Maybe one more question from me before we wrap up, because you both are kind of talking about money again now. You're talking about where to get the money from. Should we not do something additional to stop all the fossil fuel drilling that's still going on?
Oh yeah, of course, yes. And that is also one of the topics here. Last year, we had, of course, the outcome in Dubai, an energy package which stated that countries needed to transition away from fossil fuels, needed to triple in renewables and double energy efficiency. And we are here not only for this climate finance goal, but also for this. We want to see that energy package translated into national plans from all the parties that are here. And we want to see this energy package actually being implemented, you know, on global scale. And also there, we're pushing hard to get, you know, ambitious outcomes. So clearly, without that, we won't meet the 1.5 degree target that is set here by all the parties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in addition to that, but it's aligned with that. So Swedbank, we have been quite active in supporting the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty to ask governments to have a plan to phase out fossil fuels. This, I think, will help also businesses. They always complain about uncertainty. This will help if you can give certainty. I think also more policies in the global north directed at overconsumption of carbon intensive products, luxury taxes, that kind of stuff. Also, but this gets a little bit more technical, kind of sufficiency policies, policies aimed at not consuming too much. There are a lot of ideas. Right to repair is one of them. Taxes on fast fashion, that kind of stuff. So really working on the global north to at least reduce your carbon emissions. And there's also sources, again, for paying to the global south.
Yeah. So indeed, you try to adapt lifestyle and meanwhile, you raise that money that could be used to then help the global south adapting to climate change, but also mitigating, preventing further emissions. Thanks a lot, both, for this discussion. We're going to move on to the hopeful or dreadful news of the week. Hans, you have been reading the news as always.
As always, as always.
What have you got for me?
Crypto. This was a week of crypto. Trump wants to be the US to be the crypto country of the world, so deregulating crypto. And you saw Bitcoin rising very high. And given the topic, so I was a little bit in my back, so how can we raise money? I saw also in a report from the Global Solidarity Levies Task Force. We'd had a lot of ideas. Some of them we already mentioned before. But one of the ideas was to have a solidarity level on crypto. Crypto is notoriously energy intensive. Mining Bitcoin, almost close to 1% of global energy demand each year.
Wow.
And if you would just charge a small amount, they propose $4.5 per kilowatt hour. That would already give $5 billion.
It's not yet a trillion.
So, and I also had a follow-up thought on that. So it was not in the report. We can also do it with AI.
Right.
Right. So we can also, the energy and water consumption area, also water, then we can also use that as new sources for paying for climate mitigation and adaptation. And then everybody would say, yeah, this is impossible. How do we get this done? I think it is possible. And that's also in the reports by starting. And I think that's a new approach. So don't negotiate so long at the COP. It's not working. Coalitions of the willing. So pockets of or some countries that really want to do it, experiment with it, and then the rest will follow. So I think for today, this is really hopeful news. We have to think more creative how we can raise money for climate adaptation and mitigation.
That's great. And I imagine that Hilde can only agree because you've just proposed indeed an additional way of getting money flowing, essentially from very rich people in the global north towards the global south. I want to thank you both, Hans and Hilde, for being here and taking the time to record this podcast with us. We will have to see what the outcomes of the COP are really going to be because you're still in the middle of it. As we said, we're recording this on Monday the 18th, so a lot might still change. And we really hope that we come out with a hopeful message. If you enjoyed listening to this episode, then please do subscribe. That helps us a lot. And stay tuned for next week's episode. That's a wrap for this episode of Money for Change. We hope you found today's conversation insightful and inspiring as we continue to explore the transitions that are shaping our world and our future. If you enjoyed what you heard, don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Thanks for tuning in to Money for Change.